Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Oh, we get to do Five Reasons I Hate You in the next segment. I can't wait. And to that end, I've got four. I'm trying not to repeat reasons to hate divisional teams. I mean, when we just did the Titans 6 weeks ago.
What happened to Jay Cutler recently? Did he get arrested for something?
Oh, good question.
I'm going to blame the city of Nashville for that.
Okay. I'll add that to the list.
Jay Cutler, I've enjoyed much more in retirement, or at least I was when. Remember, you and I did a podcast on the Cavalieri. The Cavalieri show.
Yeah. That was fun. I had a good time.
I had completely forgotten about that episode in my life. That was before you and I were co-hosts, wasn't it?
It was, man. It was like back in 17 or 18, man.
I was having you on the Deceptively Fast podcast once a week at the time, and we decided, you know what? We should just turn this into reaction to the...
Very Cavalieri, yeah.
And that's what you and I both discovered. It's like, man, I really like this retired Jay Cutler.
Yes.
More than Jay Cutler, the football player.
Yes. Just a out of touch husband, you know what I mean? Like totally sheepish about everything. Wore a scarf, you know?
He was just grumpy. He didn't want to, like, it was everything you would expect out of Jay Cutler, except that it was very, like, him cast as that role in a sitcom. And you're like, oh, yeah, he's like Archie Bunker. Yeah.
Right.
He's a lovable old, not racist like Archie Bunker.
No.
But like, a lovable, grumpy old man.
Oh, my God. And married.
Kids, that's going to sound bad if you don't understand the whole dynamic. It's hard to explain. Okay, yeah. Man, it was a different time, all right?
Yeah, different time. And his wife was a go-getter. You know, like, you know, say what you will about her, reality TV star. Like
Edith?
She was a go-getter, too, for the times. She'd run to the door to hug Archie. She had meals ready to go.
Yeah. So, kids, when I say he was a lovable racist, it was kind of that dynamic of, like, especially in the 70s and 80s, where it's like, this is your grandpa. He is the way he is because of when he grew up. But there is good in him, but you're going to have some arguments with him.
You're going to,
like, his daughter and his son-in-law would battle about some of these civil rights type
things. That's right. So I say all this to say we need one more reason on the board to hate the Tennessee Titans. I've got four. Text in. If you want to participate, I'm going to leave the fifth reason that we hate the Titans open to the text page. 713-572-4610. Someone just texted, is there any chance Bregman is back with the Astros? The internet is driving me crazy with contradictory reports. I've not seen any reports of Bregman coming back to the Astros. Keep in mind, they traded for a third baseman and signed a first baseman, and they've got Peña at shortstop and Altuve at second base, and I don't see Bregman moving to outfield or catcher anytime soon. So I'm going to guess those reports are bogus. But one thing we have not seen are substantial reports of teams ready to pay either what Bregman wants or what Scott Boras wants Bregman to want. It's funny when we get to this stage, Seth, where a free agent's market has stagnated, which is what it feels like with Bregman. We don't know. Maybe the phone's ringing off the hook, and he's being very selective. We don't know.
There have been pretty notable examples in the last few years in baseball free agency where it's very clear it doesn't operate the way the NFL free agency does. There have been some big contracts in the new year and everything. So
yeah, NFL.
So most of the reports are that he wants $200 million. The team that wants him most is the Tigers, but that they're not willing to go to $200 million.
Right.
So it's looking more and more like, it's very possible that the Astros may have given him the high offer he's going to get, or at least very close to the high offer that he's going
to
get.
And that's where it gets super interesting to me. They offered 6 years, $156 million. And now it makes you wonder, like, if the Astros, like, if Bregman's market is drying up, or it was never that great to begin with, if maybe Boris and Bregman kind of overplayed their hand. If the Astros, like, it makes you wonder, like, if the Astros, like, man, I'm kind of glad he didn't take the 6 years, 156, you know, like,
if they felt like they were stretching, you know, like, six is going beyond, above and beyond what they normally do with an extension. The only one that's come close to it is Altuve.
Yes.
And I don't like Jim Crane's never going to do another Altuve contract.
No,
I don't think it's just not going to be.
Now, depending on what Yordan's next 4 or 5 years look like, you know, like if Yordan is a fairly healthy Hall of Fame caliber hitter, and all the stats for Yordan other than health are Hall of Fame caliber right now. We don't know. It's 5 years.
Whatever.
Out. It's 2028. I'm only saying, I think Yordan might be in the conversation, but your point is valid, which is he doesn't do the sentimental stuff, Jim Crane.
So I guess the question would be, look, they've already got Christian Walker and they've got Paredes. So they've got, you know, you got Paredes the third, you got Christian Walker, you got your corner infielders. If Bregman were to come back, then I suppose it could get interesting in terms of trading one of the two guys that you just got away or having extreme depth or whatever
chance.
It might be.
Yeah.
It's just very, very unlikely that Bregman's coming back.
Yeah, no chance. So that's the answer to you on the text page about the Bregman's not coming back. So any report you're seeing or people speculating, like, but what if? There ain't no what if. The offer's off the table. What's interesting is Bregman was viewed by all the experts as a top 5 to 10 free agent in this class, and a lot of those guys have signed. And Bregman is, in some people's mind, the biggest name still out there. I'm trying to come up with reasons, Steph. Like, okay, why are teams scared off of paying Bregman $200 million? Maybe the answer is he was never worth it to begin with. But if there's a thought that he was, the reasons I came up, you tell me the validity of these reasons. One, the gremlins in his elbow this year.
Right.
Is that a valid reason without having looked at the MRI yourself, Dr. Payne?
I think the thing about that would be that I don't know if it would be the gremlin specifically or more so just that he's seemingly had a continuous spate of non-career threatening, non-season ending injuries, but still injuries that have affected his play.
He's been okay the last couple of years, though. Like,
over his entire career, there's just been these. But usually, a lot of his long slumps are tied to some kind of like gremlins in the elbow or something that. Because I think with Correa, Correa had that medical anomaly, but it's the deal's agreed to, and then they get a look at you, and then they bail out.
Yeah.
So I think if anybody's concerned, I think they would make the offer and then do the physical, and then that's when they might pull out.
Yeah. Number two, you can't count on him until June. As your wife Brandy said in her awesome Seth Payne voice, he's a notoriously slow starter.
To be clear, she was making fun of me.
Yeah.
For saying that about Bregman always, and she just basically owned herself by Bregman. What's he had? One season where he didn't have a notoriously slow start?
I don't know what the whole back of the baseball card looks like, but it's undeniable. He does not get going offensively until June.
I wonder, there's a part of that where on the PR side of things, all right, Alex Bregman around the league and amongst a lot of fan bases might be the most disliked of the 2017 Astros, even above and beyond Correa, just because he was brash, you know, when he was young, and he had that period, even though 2019 shouldn't be included in the garbage can era Astros. Outside of Houston, people do include 2019 in that.
He was amazing that year.
And he was amazing in 2019.
Yeah.
So I think that I wonder if teams look at it that and like, man, we're going to bring him in here. He's going to be batting 189 all of the
and
entire
our fans
spring.
Are going to be like, what were you doing?
I just don't want to deal with it. Yeah. Maybe that's a small part of it. I don't think that'd be the driving force.
But this is number three for me, and this is not to. This is going to sound like me dragging Alex Bregman down as a player, and I think he's a very good baseball player. He's an elite defender, and he's a good hitter. But like the $200 million club is like to me reserved for guys who are actual current day all stars. Like Bregman, all the articles about Bregman are like he's a 2-time all star. Yeah, like he's made it zero times in the 2020s. Like he was an all-star in 2018. He's 5 years removed, now six, because we're in 2025 now, from the last time he was an all-star.
Yeah.
And you know, some of that probably has to do, it's probably part and parcel of the notoriously slow starts because the all-stars get named in July. You think it's dumb that the Pro Bowlers get named with two games to go in the season? All-stars get named in July. you know, with half a season still to go. So that's probably, you know, the two things probably feed into each other, him not making an all-star team and his being a really poor starter to the season.
Yeah.
But, like, to me, probably the biggest thing is, like, he's just, like, you're talking about $30 million a year, you know, and... And those are, like, to me, you've got to be just, like, this elite game wrecker. And, like, I think he's a trustworthy technician. Like, you trust him to do the right things in the batter's box, work the count, get walks, make contact, all those things. And you look up at the end of the year and, like, oh, okay, and he had 21 home runs and 83 RBIs. That's really cool, you know?
A lot of him being worth his contract is very front-loaded, including with that 2019 season because he signed the extension early.
Yep.
If you look at just the splits for his career, April and March, 737 OPS.
Yeah, not great.
May, 818.
Okay.
June, 840.
Okay.
July, 835. And then August, 992.
Yeah.
And then he falls back off in September, October. But that's and the part that doesn't really, because that's not a glaring difference between March, April, March, and then May,
yeah,
or March and April and May. But it speaks to some of those really bad starts that he's had.
Yeah. And again, he had some years that really inflated those numbers that he's five seasons removed from. He's not been that 900 OPS guy for a long, long time, at least best I can remember. So, I think I'm very anxious to see if he signs for something less than the Astros offered him, like what that ends up looking like for Astros.
Well, I wonder too. Yeah, I think for most Astros fans, it's probably hard to say most Astros fans. I think there's going to be a lot of Astros fans, and this is maybe how I feel about it is, all right, man, you know what? All right. I appreciate you going for the bag and all that. I get it. I don't criticize guys for doing that. Mm-hmm. But, dude, you could have been here and been a lifer. Like, it could have been. And this is where you won your World Series. The chances of you winning a World Series, no matter where you go, is pretty low. It's just, it's really hard to win a World Series, as we've noticed. But, man, and it makes it easier to emotionally distance myself from him. And it also does, I think what's happened already is... That it doesn't, what if you had any kind of consternation over the Astros not being more aggressive, it's a little bit of a stamp of credibility to the Astros that, like, okay, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
You know, this was not like, oh, that offer was not an insult, as some people wanted to claim that it was.
Right,
it was just, it might have been, who knows, depending on what Bregman gets, it might have been an overly aggressive offer.
Absolutely, yeah, that's kind of what I was alluding to before. I tweeted out about this week, and I had someone reply. Like, I basically said what I just said to you. Like, man, if Bregman signs for less than what the Astros offered, this will be really interesting. And I had one person in particular, but a few people. You know how it goes when you just kind of just put
a
vague text out there about, hey, this will be interesting. And you don't say why you think it'll be interesting. Maybe I should have been more clear. But I had people going, why is that the Astros' fault? I'm like, I don't think it is. I think if anything... The Astros come off either the more Bregman's market, and you know, unless out of nowhere he gets an 8-year deal for $270 million, then all bets are off. But I don't think that's happening. If anything, the Astros either look good in this situation if I'm an Astro fan because they made a fair offer, or they might have been over aggressive depending on what he signs. Like, wow, even if that's the case, I think with most Astro fans, they'll still feel like the Astros look good in the whole thing because they went out of their way to try to keep an icon here. At that point, it's back on Bregman. Like, okay, why didn't you... Did you overplay your hand or did you just not want to be here to begin with? And I think if it were the second, I don't think he'd ever admit it, but if it were truly the second, I think that's where Astro fans would be like, well, screw you, man. Your salsa sucked anyways. Your salsa was terrible.
It was a little bit of a... you know.
We can say it now. He's not coming back. That salsa was not good.
It felt like a lot of other athlete forays into the food business where it's, man, some smart marketing dude got a hold of him, but it wasn't a marketing dude from the actual food industry.
Right.
Like it was the only athlete, like kind of gimmicky, there's some athletes like Nolan Ryan obviously knows the beef business.
Yes.
Like he was an actual rant.
Right.
He actually raised beef and everything.
Yes.
So like there's that. But when you can tell people are just putting their name on something, it's the only one that I've ever really liked, it was just like a promotional gimmick, was the Flutie Flakes. They were they were a better version of Frosted Flakes.
Mm-hmm.
They were like a thicker, heartier. They didn't get soggy in milk.
No,
it was very impressive.
Okay.
Yes.
No kidding.
Lobbied. I saw him in the Super Bowl once, and I was at the Super Bowl, and I was like, he thought I was joking. I was like, no, I swear. Those were the best Frosted Flake type cereal I've ever had.
I love that. He probably liked that because everybody else walks up to him to talk about the Hail Mary against Miami in 1984.
Yeah.
You know, and here comes Seth Payne like, bro, your cereal was popping, man.
It's probably, the problem is that he's also like, he's super healthy, you know, and there's probably a little bit of like, man, I'm out there running triathlons and everything and trying to be trying to encourage people to live healthy lives, like me putting out a sugary money grab. I would have to call him not Flutie Flakes, the sugary money grab.
But they went to charity, didn't they? I thought the Flutie Flakes were for charity.
Yeah, it goes to charity. It helps support diabetes research.
Is it? No, it doesn't. I seriously think it was a charity event.
No, I'm sure it did go to charity.
800 grams of sugar.
There's other things you can do for charity,
for diabetes research, and this cereal is going to make sure we have plenty of specimens to research and all this.
We want to be sure we test everybody for diabetes out there by seeing if you go into a sugar coma when you eat these extra sugary Frosted Flakes.
That's right. A lot of people weighing in on Bregman. Ooh, a nerdy text. Here we go. It's because his batted ball profile is in decline.
Oh,
Stat nerd Seth loves this.
If you send me to Baseball Savant, I will kiss you on the forehead.
Yep.
And then give you a bowl of Flutie Flakes.
He had a hard time.
And violate you while you're in your sugar coma.
he had a hard time lifting the ball, and his typically elite walk rate dropped by 50% last season. Wow, is that true? Did it drop?
Did his walk rate drop that much?
I gotta check that. That sounds like a lot.
That guy on the payroll.
If Bregman signs somewhere else, or is it still looking somewhere else, or is still looking somewhere else? Is the original offer still on the table from before he signs? My guess is they've taken the offer off the table. Someone's saying on here you could move Paredes to left field. He played a little bit of left field last year. They signed Christian Walker. I don't think there's room underneath the competitive balance tax. This is a Forrest Gump situation where Forrest gets on the bus, and in this case, Alex Bregman is Forrest Gump, leg braces and all, and he's trying to sit down on the Astros bus, and Jeremy Pena is like, seats taken. And so is Paredes and Christian Walker, and they're all like, seats taken. Sorry, Breggy.
You know, the walk rate is... I'm glad that listener brought that up, because honestly, a lot of his... a lot of his plate appearance stats are still elite, like 96th percentile on squared up percentage, whiff percentage, 98th percentile. Strikeout, he's in the 94th percentile. Base on balls, he's in the 32nd percentile last year.
All right.
I didn't realize it was as drastic as it was. I kind of like, he's not taking walks like he used to and everything. But it's weird that it's that low. Hey, smart, nerdy listener, tell me the reason for the difference between his walk rate and the other, pitch judgment rates are so much different this year.
Someone weighing in saying, salsa not good. I completely disagree. No, I like salsa. I just didn't like Bregman's salsa. That's all. I thought it was watery. It was a little too watery for me.
But maybe, you never said that salsa's not good.
They just said that, right. Yeah, I think they're alluding to Bregman's. Okay. Yeah, I think they are. I don't know. Someone saying Earl Campbell's sausage. And that's true. Earl Campbell, you're talking about athletes that have put their name on
things. That is him putting his name on it.
That's really good.
But it's good.
Yeah.
Well, you know what happens is, if it's good, then it stands the test of time long beyond when the guy is a relevant current athlete.
Yes.
So the best... Okay, we should do that as a power ranking sometime in the offseason. The problem is the Rockets are interesting this year, so we can't do it in February or March. Or Monday. Yes. depending on...
We spend
all day money. So the best athlete named foods.
Athletes are to put their name on the brand right there. The brand, athlete branded food products.
So Nolan Ryan beef in general, Earl Campbell sausage.
Which is also very good.
I'm probably forgetting a few the very obvious ones, but we'll have to think on this and or ask AI during the weekend.
Bregman's salsa will be gone. It may be gone already, right? Like if he's playing somewhere else,
Yeah.
I think that'll be gone.
I don't know if how much of a big seller it was.
Shelf now, space is valuable, man.
Lance is doing a coffee shop, but it's not like his own coffee shop or anything.
No, but that's where it ultimately goes, though. You know, that's where it starts there with doing your own thing. And then all of a sudden, like, wow, people are really digging this. I think I'll put it on the shelves in grocery stores.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see. The George Foreman grill. That's not a food product.
Oh, yeah, but I, you know what, though? But it was very, very, very successful.
Very successful.
I might put that into the, we might have to expand it out to just products? Overall products yeah. that stand the test of time.
Yeah.
That, Brandy and I were talking about the George Foreman grill the other day because you and I had been talking about it.
Yeah.
And she listens. And we were talking about those things were really, really convenient.
Easy to use.
The cleanup process was the best.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, it's almost like you're grilling, but you can just dump the grease and it's no big deal.
Really cool. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, let's do it. Keep texting them in, man. I'm looking for some good ones. I need a fifth reason. Five reasons I hate you. Tennessee Titans edition. Next.
Payne and Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln of Sugarland. On the Southwest Freeway, exit Kirkwood and take the first U-turn at West Airport under the giant American flag. It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, five reasons I hate you. Let's go. Five reasons I hate you. Titans edition. And, you know, again, the Titans are a divisional team, so we gotta stretch the creative boundaries here. Or if we're going to...
Yeah, we see them twice a year.
Twice a year, man.
You know?
Now, there's different ways to shoot at the same target. You know, Amy Adams-Strunk is going to catch some here, and she'll catch some next year as well.
Sorry about it.
Her dad might catch some here in a second, but...
Heavy is the head that wears the inherited crown
right.
and bad polyester suit.
And belt buckle. Yeah. So let's get to it here. Five reasons I hate you, Tennessee Titans edition. Obviously, one big reason is they beat the Texans in Week 12. That's not part of the five, but if you want to...
I don't remember that.
Send in reasons. We'll read them off the text page. Doesn't have to stop at five, but these are the five that we're using for purposes of this segment. One is a simple one. They hate Houston, so we hate them.
Right.
And it's started with the pettiest MF-er of them all, the patriarch of this organization, Bud Adams. And maybe one of the pettiest things he ever did, other than up and leaving, was back in 2006 in the draft, where literally he took Vince Young just to piss off the city of Houston. Nobody in the building there other than Bud Adams wanted Vince Young. Here's Matt Leinart and Floyd Reese, the GM at the time. Matt Leinart was one of the other QBs on the board at the time, telling the story of how they found out that Tennessee was taking Vince Young that year.
Jeff Fisher was an SC guy, so the ties were there.
This is Leinart.
But he had told me that it looks like, you know, the owner wants Vince Young.
This was a Bud Adams decision.
Lawyer
Bud came in and said that, you know, this is our guy. I think he saw the Rose Bowl and he was infatuated with the Rose Bowl.
It was rumored that Houston really wanted Vince. Years before, we'd had to leave. And even though he still lived there, Bud was never really happy about that whole thing. And I think in Bud's mind, if he could pull one over on Houston by getting Vince Young, then, you know, he was going to have a yuck about it.
With the third choice in the 2006 NFL draft, the Tennessee Titans select Vince Young, quarterback, University of Texas.
So there you go.
So you know, the part that gets even more interesting, it was, okay, obviously it didn't work out with Vince Young ultimately. He was rookie of the year, beat the Texans in that first season, but... it didn't work out on the football side of things, but also Vince Young was on Johnny Manziel's podcast this week or the week before, basically saying that he would have loved to go to Houston, but it turns out Houston, the way he understood the story was Houston didn't want Vince Young, apparently because they didn't like his agent. And Vince Young, he's funny in this interview, says like, well, I wish y'all would have told me that. I would have fired him. I would have fired my agent. You're like, you're not taking
me
if you don't like my agent.
Yeah.
I'll fire the guy.
Yeah.
Just let me know. And who knows? You never know. Like, maybe different circumstances, different coaches. You never know if a quarterback's going to work out or not. But it was, yeah, he was petty, man. He was a, Bud Adams was a petty dude. He didn't want you to tailgate. He didn't,
Yeah. That's right. Oh, that's a good sub-reason, Seth. Bud Adams didn't let you tailgate back in the day, Houston. I don't know if it was
his decision. Taking money out of his pocket in his mind.
Yeah. All right, so that's reason number five. Reason number four, these brainwashed idiots down there in the building worship Amy Adams Strunk. And let's just, there's plenty that we can play, but let's play. Here's Jeffrey Simmons after the win against the Texans talking about, oh, it meant so much to Amy.
We felt good, man, not just for us, for Miss Amy. You know, we know the history behind everything, and just to see her in this locker room, you know, with tears in her eyes, you know, how much this means to her. Now, that's the reason why, you know, we, especially myself, like, go out there and give them all. You know, we had a mindset last night. We talked about it. You know, let this game mean a little more and play for our owner.
Yeah, she got the game ball. And, you know, like I said, this was for her, you know, being able to come here. You know, she even showed me her belt buckle. You know, she had the Houston Oilers belt buckle on. And, you know, just to see that, and like I said, when she gave a speech and said how much this means to her, you know, that's the reason why you play this game. And you, when you have owners who care, who do everything for us, you know, it's easy to go to war for her.
Her butt buckle showed me her. What was he trying to say that he twice almost said, showed me her butt?
I think he accidentally said buckle first. Yeah. You know, that's what it sounded like.
It felt like he ended it with a T, though.
Yeah, a little
maybe bit. A little Freudian slip there. Maybe that's what he was hoping for.
Just scoping out Amy Adams.
Get yourself a rich woman. Yeah.
But, yeah, man. She owns an NFL team. Yeah. I think she's married.
If you were going to target a rich woman, who would you target? If you're going to try to go be a boy toy
Dolly
for somebody.
Parton. Dolly Parton, and I wouldn't think twice.
That's true. Yeah. She's been married for like 50 years, hasn't
she? And her
she?
Husband's very like anonymous and in the background. Yeah,
yeah, he knows his deal, right? Yeah.
Dolly Parton is my favorite human being on the planet. I love Dolly
She's
Parton.
Managed to remain a sex symbol through her, what is she, in her 80s now?
She's in her, she's in her late 70s or early 80s. Yeah. Amy had recorded her Christmas special back during Christmas, and then while I was doing stuff for the show last night, Amy was watching it, and I'm just glancing over my shoulder. I'm like, man, I mean, I know she's all made up for television and everything right now, but holy smokes, for 79 years old or whatever.
I never had an appreciation, like, as I didn't really know much about her or anything. I didn't think one way or the other about her in terms of her personality, but just these last few years, now that I've seen some long interviews with her, and just I probably went down a YouTube rabbit hole. She's just a fascinating person.
Yes.
It really is. She's so anyway, but she's.
That's my answer.
Crap. We're supposed to be bagging on Nashville here.
Oh, no, she's not a reason to hate Nashville. Like, see,
I know, man. I shouldn't be. It just occurred to me. Oh, yeah.
Save
Dollywood. Oh, yeah. All right. No, she sucks. She sucks.
No, she
She's
doesn't.
Always sucked. And her husband's a fool.
Okay. Yeah. Reason number three. So reason number five, Bud Adams, petty. Reason number four, Amy Adams, brainwashed. Amy Adams Strunk, brainwashed all these people. Number three, Hoctua girl. Is from Tennessee. I liked Hoctua girl when all she was just some chick in the French Quarter talking about, you know, different methodology.
How to gain popularity with your first cousins at the family reunion.
Precisely, yeah.
Yeah.
She since, to her credit, I guess, has become a much bigger star. She has capitalized on her 15 minutes in a big, big way, unfortunately.
She's got a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
She's actually, I grudgingly thought, I watched it for a little while. I'm like, you know what? She's actually pretty interesting. She seems like the cool, fun chick.
She's very likable.
Yeah.
She's very likable, except when she's part of swindling people out of millions of dollars with some phony coin.
Nah,
which
you
is
win some, you lose some.
Hate, Seth. Hate.
Is that what happened? So did she started some cryptocurrency?
The group. I'm looking at the article about the lawsuit. The group behind the meme coin named after viral Hoctua girl Haley Welch has been hit with a lawsuit from investors after the shock coin dollar sign in front of the word hawk crashed within hours of its launch. Complaint filed in New York. The accuses. Tua the Moon Foundation, and the founder.
Tua the Moon.
It's pretty good. Her podcast is Talk Tua. Like, it's a very malleable name, you know?
Yeah.
So this guy named Doc Hollywood, Alex Larson Schultz, that's his nickname, is Doc Hollywood. They're accused of illegally selling and promoting the coin, which was allegedly not a registered security. And Welch is not named in the suit, but she wrote on social media, "I take this situation extremely seriously and want to address my fans, the investors who have been affected, and the broader community. I am fully cooperating with and am committed to assisting the legal team representing the individuals impacted." Okay, somebody wrote this for her. "As well as to help uncover the truth, hold the responsible parties accountable, and resolve this matter." She is the face of a phony coin scandal.
So, and I'm sure, I'm guessing that as all part of this, she's given back any of the money she profited from
it. I haven't found that anywhere in the...
Did she sell away some of the... Until I find out, they're like, oh, wait, no. Yes, I cashed out, but I'm giving all of that money to the people that got burned. Did she say that?
On December 5th, they launched the coin. Welch promoted it on her social media to her following. The coin quickly surged to a market cap of $490 million.
Oh, my gosh.
Before plummeting to $41 million within a matter of hours.
Wow. So there were, I mean, there were some.
I just don't understand.
Was there pumping and dumping going on there?
Yes, I don't know. I don't.
This is what I'll tell you about crypto, Sean.
Yeah.
It's that it doesn't make any sense. And then when you start to learn about why it works, you realize, oh, I've never understood why money works in general. Which is a realization that you're like, oh yeah, oh that's right, it's all a myth.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So it's just, and then just set it to the side and don't think about it
anymore. All right. Well, so Hawk Tua girl, your tweet apology notwithstanding, sorry, your reason number three that we hate Tennessee today. Reason number two. These are a couple football ones here at the end. The Titans handed DeAndre Hopkins to the Chiefs for a conditional fifth-round pick. From all the other teams that are actual playoff teams in the AFC, thanks a lot for that. Thanks for making the Chiefs better. This is like Buffalo when they traded the Chiefs the pick that they got Xavier Worthy with. Like, why are you teams helping the defending, two-time defending Super Bowl champions here? What are we doing?
It feels like if you're about to like get in a gang fight and you're like, Oh, hey, guy! I noticed you, the guys on the other side there, a couple of them don't have brass knuckles. I'll give them mine.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You treacherous fool.
Oh, my God.
That's what they are. They're the Tennessee Titans, these idiots.
Ugh. They handed DeAndre Hopkins to them, and D-Hop still has, he's still got gas in the tank, man.
One thing, I'll set aside the pettiness for a minute and say that, look, the Texans have a hand in whether or not the Titans draft potentially second overall or... How far could they realistically fall if they win this game?
Probably like 7th or 8th, if I had to guess. Without looking, if I had to guess, yeah.
I mean, we'll have a part in determining exactly where the Titans don't draft a quarterback.
Yeah.
So this is, I'm not being petty about it. I think they're going to botch it again. I think they'll pass. Like, J.C. Latham looks like a good young player and everything, the offensive tackle they drafted. But they also passed up Bo Nix and some other guys that look, that have some real potential.
Because
they wanted to just see what they had with Will freaking Levis, which any Texans fan could have told you after last year, like, oh, no, he's not the guy.
He's not the guy.
No, no.
And yet they let him throw for 278 yards in week 12. Okay, this isn't five reasons I hate the Texans. This is five reasons I hate the Titans.
Oh, yeah, no. That makes it more, that's what makes it also more inexcusable that the Texans allowed that performance.
Agreed.
He's not the guy.
Agreed. All right, reason number one, five reasons I hate you, two words, Cortland Finnegan.
Derek Ward in the game, the lone back, shot under center, third and 8 at the 41 of Tennessee. Handoff Ward, flagged down, running right, and brought down across the 35-yard line. And now Andre Johnson and Finnegan are going at it. Helmet comes off of Finnegan, and Andre Johnson's ejected. Andre Johnson lost his cool with Cortland Finnegan, and you know Cortland's just trying to get Andre Johnson upset. More fighting on the field. Big pushing, shoving action. And Andre Johnson wants more. Somebody's got to hold him back. A big pileup at the 40-yard line.
All right, we know what happened the rest of the way.
You know what's even more reason to hate Tennessee specifically still, even though that happened long in the past? This is what Nashvillians, because they're so inbred and stupid and illiterate, don't understand.
Yeah.
I saw Cortland Finnegan on an interview trying to explain that was exactly what he was hoping to happen, and his strategy worked. Like, no, Andre waited until the end of the game, after the game was already in hand and the Texans had secured the victory, before he went in to get into that fight with you. Now, Andre did end up suspended like for the first half of the next game or whatever it was, but in terms of Cortland Finnegan
affecting the game... He just got fined. He didn't get suspended.
He got fined, okay.
Yeah.
So, but it wouldn't have mattered anyway. It didn't do anything to help the Titans win that game.
Right.
It was like, yeah... Cortland's the kind of guy that's like, he just like, he feels like if he gets somebody upset that's the greatest feat he could accomplish in life. But it didn't do actually anything to help the Titans in that game.
They lost 20-0.
Right.
They got blown out in that. And that was, they got blown out by what at that point in the season was a bad Texans team.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, they didn't, yeah. And
so Titans fans would still, like, they believe Cortland Sutton when he says that because they don't investigate things because they're not capable of doing it. They don't have broadband internet or reading skills. It's just a big, useless state.
When we had Andre on before the, it was on Christmas we had him on, before the game on the pregame show, and you brought up the Finnegan fight. You brought up the fact that Andre had told, I think, the Pivot podcast, that he gets asked about it every day.
This is how I brought it up. I said that you get asked about this every day of your life, and that's not an exaggeration. Somebody at some point during the day is going to say, hey, that accordion. So I asked him, like, what would you like? What would you like? Which play would you prefer that people ask you about? And he didn't really have an answer at the ready, so then you went ahead and asked him a question about Cortland Finnegan. You did the exact same thing that I was trying to stop.
No. I think somebody brought, because Vandy was with us. I think Vandy
brought up the Washington game.
The Washington game on fourth down where he spiked the ball and D'Angelo Hall is like laying on his face in the background.
Yeah.
And then I asked him if they were to build a statue of you outside the stadium one day, would you be okay with it being a statue of you pummeling Cortland Finnegan? And ultimately, I think he said yes, ultimately.
He basically said like that there's no other choice, I don't think. Because when I asked him, like, what question would you prefer people ask, and maybe we could encourage people to ask that question instead of the Cortland Finnegan thing, I can't remember what he said exactly. It was funny.
He
said, like, it's lost, Seth. There's no stopping it. They're gonna ask. Don't worry about it.
Yep. Biggest takeaway from the quarterfinal round of the college football playoff, which ended last night with Notre Dame beating Georgia. Biggest takeaway, and doesn't have anything to do really with the four teams that are left in the college football playoff. I think there's a big trend here that was on display over the course of the season and in these quarterfinals. We'll talk about that coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on that was, you and I were talking during the break about, like, trying to remember people's names, and Michael Scott on The Office had the greatest method of doing it, which was find some physical feature of a person, and that he had some really convoluted way, but he started going around the room. He was speaking to a room full of people, and he's like, mustache guy, glasses, mole face, sugar boobs. Girls like
sugar
what?
Boobs.
Sugar
oh
boobs.
My God.
Show was the best. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. I'm looking up at the TV. Ryan Clark is on Get Up right now, and I'm guessing he's going in on Cam Newton, who had not so nice things to say about the University of Notre Dame. And I said, like, no one wants to watch Notre Dame. Apparently Cam went in on Notre Dame a couple times during his first take appearances.
Is this the Cam Newton that also says that the WNBA is going to surpass baseball in popularity by
and then with a loud afterwards? Yes, that's the same.
Newton. We all have bad takes, but that seems like a curiously bad take. that feels like it's motivated by something in his personal life. Feels like the kind of all right, fine, I'll say it. Yeah.
Or clickbait. Well, and Ryan Clark, I'll go find it on the internet later after the show, but I was real interested to see what he was going to say about it, because his son plays for Notre Dame. His son transferred from Arizona State to play, and he starts at safety for Notre Dame. Jordan Clark, he's a very good player. But it was a good night last night for the Irish, man. Quarterfinals are over, so we've got the two semifinals now. Seth is as an observer of college football who doesn't have a dog in the fight with any of these teams in the semifinals. How does Texas versus Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl and Notre Dame versus Penn State in the Orange Bowl float your boat?
It feels good in a lot of ways. I think, for one, okay, whether you wanted Indiana or somebody else or Boise State or some kind of an underdog, great, you know, pick yourself up by the bootstrap story, that would have been awesome and fun. But ultimately, it almost feels like this first version of this playoffs. Okay, the blowouts stunk, and you start to wonder, like, all right, boy, I don't know if this is going to work out. But then you turn it into, wow, the SEC, not all that impressive. Not all that. And the only SEC team still in it is a team that you had to import into the SEC. without Texas in there, they're sitting. They get shut out of the quarterfinals.
Yep. Or the semis.
Or the semifinals.
Yeah.
So, I like it. And then, but it's you got name brand competitive teams that it makes sense that they're there. And this is going to be good from the semifinals on. I feel really good about this.
Yeah. The helmets in the laundry are great in these two games. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like these are iconic teams, schools, programs, uniforms, whatever. There's big time players. You know, that Notre Dame game, they've got really good guys across that defense. Going up against Penn State, who have Tyler Warren, who is like every Texan fan has been drooling over, you know, the need for a tight end, a big time tight end. I don't know that he's going to be there when the Texans are picking necessarily. But I think that part's cool. But yeah, you touched on it. Especially watching Georgia, like it was so strange for me as a Notre Dame fan to watch and I know Georgia had their backup quarterback. I would submit that backup quarterback posed more challenges to Notre Dame, given the lack of tape and the fact that Carson Beck, the original starter, wasn't very good this year.
Yeah.
I think Gunnar Stockton may have posed a bigger challenge to them in terms of preparing for that game. But it was very strange for me. Notre Dame, a program that had not won a major bowl game in 30 years, literally in 30 years, a major bowl game they'd not won. And when they had gotten on that stage, particularly against SEC schools, it didn't look good. Like Alabama took them to the woodshed multiple times when they would actually have good regular seasons and make the postseason. It was so strange for me to watch a Notre Dame high-level bowl game last night against an SEC team and never really be worried about whether or not they were going to win the football game. You know, like mm-hmm. I know it was close in the first half. It was 6-3. That turnover with under a minute to go, Georgia getting aggressive at the end of the half, trying to go get points. Notre Dame strips the ball. They get next play, they get a touchdown. And then they get the ball to start the second half, literally score on the first play of the second half on a kickoff return. And Georgia threatened a little bit, and Notre Dame never really moved the ball until they had to at the end of the game. But it was so strange for me to never feel like, oh, here it comes. Here comes the SEC. And I think that's the overall feel. Like Alabama not even in this playoff. You know, Georgia coming back to the pack a little bit. Tennessee getting their heads handed to them by Ohio State. And you're absolutely right. The only one that's done anything is the one they imported into the SEC this year.
Right. And so it's kind of...
They went to double overtime with Scottabo.
I would say this. I think for the majority of college football outside the SEC, you maybe feel a little bit more like, man, all right, you know what? We could probably compete with the big dogs in NIL and everything else and transfer portal. But also, even the teams within the SEC, I actually feel like if I'm a team in the SEC, I would actually welcome the SEC being less dominant because they're, you know, being the fifth best team in America, but also fifth in your conference.
Yeah.
It starts to wear on you for a while after a while.
Yeah.
And good coaches get fired just because they can't beat Nick Saban or whomever else.
Yeah.
So like that part of it, if you genuinely want to compete, I think there's a little bit of the SEC pride that's self-defeating in some respects.
No doubt.
For the sum total of everybody.
Yeah, and that's what's made Texas's season so impressive to me. When Texas and OU chose to go to the SEC, that dynamic was kind of flipped on its head. UT hadn't become what they are now, and OU was still the big dog in the Big 12.
Yeah.
That's flipped around where OU is now the 500 football team, and Texas is, they're one of the four best teams in the sport by definition of the playoff here. That's what's so impressive about what Texas has done to me, because when they chose to go to the SEC, both schools, I said, yeah, it's a cool cash grab, but they're also going to realize, like, somebody's got to lose these games. You know what I mean? Like, you can't have 11, 10-win teams coming out of a conference. It's just mathematically impossible. It's a zero-sum game. So that's what's made Sark and what they've done so impressive this year. But, yeah, like, the SEC, this was if I'm going to make a Rocky analogy here, this was for the rest of college football, I think, outside the SEC. This was like the Russian is cut kind of moment. Like that moment in Rocky IV where he's getting dominated by Ivan Drago, but he lands one punch and Ivan Drago is cut for the first time in his life. His face is busted open. And now it's like, oh, okay, he bleeds. You know, like this guy's mortal. And then, spoiler alert, Rocky goes on to win the fight. But I think that's kind of what this was for the rest of college football. Like, okay, like the SEC was average to below average in bowl games this year. You know, I think they had a sub-500 record in bowl games. The only team left is Texas. Notre Dame, I think, was clearly the better team last night against Georgia in a playoff game. Alabama didn't make the playoff this year. So I think it makes it more fun. I don't root for any of these SEC schools. You know what I mean? Like, my dog is still in the fight. But I think it's fun, and I think that's where NIL, you and I have talked a lot about how maybe it's risen the level of the lesser teams. Like, yeah, it's made more Cinderellas. But the ultimate story might be that it's brought the lead dogs back to the pack a little bit, too.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, you look at Notre Dame and the various Riley Leonard and other transfers that made a big difference in that game.
Yeah.
And the other, I mean, but as far as the game itself goes, both teams were playing good defense, but Notre Dame was just playing explosively good defense. Yeah. Like, just wait, they had five tackles for a loss. They had multiple sacks in that game. They were just living behind the line of scrimmage. But they were both teams were abysmal on third downs, weren't they?
Yeah, they were both.
Yeah, like, nobody was converting third down.
Not until Notre Dame had to grind some clock at the end. At one point, both teams were 2 for 10 on third down.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was bad. Yeah, wasn't a great.
But otherwise, but as defensive games go, that was it was an aesthetically pleasing defensive game.
Yeah.
It wasn't a. Oh gosh, this is the most boring game ever. It was an exciting, fun, explosive game.
Yeah, I think the crowd played into it too. The crowd played really well on the telecast. I thought a lot of Notre Dame people there, but it's also in SEC country.
I'll give you that. I grudgingly give you that, and I've done that a couple times this year already. Notre Dame looks good on television, just like their actual uniforms.
They pop. They do. Yeah, they do. Man, those gold helmets.
Like Baylor back in the day.
Mm-hmm. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a football Friday. Let's circle back over to the Texans. We'll get Seth's prediction on Week 18 against the Titans a little later on in the 9 o'clock hour. We have guys get named to the Pro Bowl yesterday. Some fun facts. I think there's one big one about maybe the most polarizing Pro Bowler for the Texans, a factoid that people don't realize that may make their stomachs turn a little bit. But we'll get to some fun facts on these guys. And Nico Collins was on the drive yesterday. How did it feel to make the Pro Bowl? We'll hear from Nico coming up next.